Now we're here live with Sam Mason Bell.
Hello.
And Jackson Batchelor.
Hello.
Hello. And we just watched Taped Up Memories from Trash Arts from these fine fellows. Very grim movie.
Yeah.
No denying that. That's kind of what we do.
Yes. Yeah, you were very scary yourself, Jackson.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was aiming to be.
So is there any inspiration to the movie?
I think because we wanted to explore different kind of like found footage sort of stylings by breaking up the narrative and throwing it around. So it was wanting to do those sort of home found footage movies. You know, where a holiday is being shot and we're just watching the two characters unravel. Like, what's it called? Willow Creek? The one with Bigfoot?
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic found footage film, which a lot doesn't happen, but in that key moment with the tent, a hell of a lot happens, you know? Mm-hmm. But it was more about, like, wanting to mess with the format. That was, like, the key kind of thing that he wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we decided to take sort of a relatively simple story of just a hitchhiker who kills everyone in the car, and use that so that it wasn't too confusing for an audience to try and have to put the pieces together because it's so sort of fragmented and odd. Yeah.
Along those lines, what's like the script like when you make a movie like this? Because I know from talking to you guys in the past, sometimes you don't really have like a traditional script.
We did an improv one again. But this one was kind of, it was odd because we had like a script of like what you were going to see on the screen. And then we had the script throughout the day of like their journey and what happened at each point. So it was sort of, two or even three scripts, I think, at different points, like just to work out every element of it. Quite complicated, but yeah, no, like it was it was about that sort of what am I trying to say,
the structuring
basically. It's the it was looking at that and sort of like focusing on that element of it. Definitely.
What's that like to edit then?
Well, that was the kind of,
because I assume like most of the movie, which I guess all movies are, but for this one especially, was really formed in the editing.
Well, yeah, this is the thing. The first thing we did is we put the whole entire narrative as we did on the day of shooting. So we just see that story played for just to make sure that kind of worked. And then it was about finding those key points that we could switch to the moments of the holiday footage or the interviews with the guys who are like talking about the war and stuff like that. It was that trying to find the right jarring moments and then having those, like my favorite edit in it is when Ella gets the camera smashed in her face and she's crying and we cut to her laughing.
Have that in my notes. I think that's the best. That was a great cut because you have, it's a great contrast.
Yeah, like it's a weird one because when we wrote it, we thought, oh, that's horrible. That's a horrible idea. But having not seen it with like an audience, it's interesting to see if that violence comes out of nowhere for them. Well, for us, we've seen it 100 times. So we can see okay, here comes that big violent bit. But how much of out of the blue it'd be, yeah, for regular people.
Big Bubba here, he says, the killer's right next to you, Sam.
He's always there.
Looking around for a weapon now.
And I believe that is Sergeant Davey Smith in the chat.
Yes, we just actually, the weird thing with this film is part of a trilogy.
Okay.
And we were shooting this film, one of the guys who worked on it, S.N. Sibley or Stephen Sibley, he talked quite heavily with us about wouldn't it be cool to expand it and go a bit further. So we shot it last year, and then this year we shot the prequel. What happens literally the day before when Jackson's character gets to the woods. There's a whole different group of people that he spends time with, like a war veterans group, which features Rich or Big Bubba Lua. That's his character in the prequel. So it was quite nice to like bring in those hints of his character in the first one. He's quite more prominent in the next one. And yeah, we took the same attitude with that. We took a couple of days and Steve did an awesome job directing that. And yeah, and then this year, well, next year, sorry, we're going to focus on the third part, which is more of a full-on true crime documentary that explores from this year, from 2023, 20 years from the murder.
Oh, interesting.
It's very ambitious.
Yeah, the films are set in 2003, so we're sort of, you know, writing a timeline now for them. The character of what he's been up to in that time, when he got caught, how he got caught, all of those kind of things. And it's really a fun project to work on.
It's
wild.
I watched Savage Land,
mm-hmm.
and that has that. It's one of those beautiful, perfect true crime sort of horror movies where you have to question that you're watching a movie. And I think if we can try and do that with the third one, where we go in very serious and try and do like a Netflix true crime serial killer thing, but make people question, then that would be an awesome aim. And it's a really difficult thing. Like, there's not many films that can put you in that position where you go, wait, what's going on?
Mm-hmm. That's real.
Yeah. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting challenge.
The veterans aspect of the movie, is that inspired by anybody you know?
No, I can't remember why we went down that route now.
Firstly, there was the timing of it. Yeah. And because we wanted, like, the thing is, being like, I'm 34, so I remember being a teenager and seeing how people were responding to that. And because of the perfect time gap between Jackson's character and this young guy going to war when he would have been in the Gulf War, and we wanted to look at the kind of effects that going into a situation like that does. I mean, like, the second one, or the prequel, sorry, explores it more with this personal group of people who have had their stories. And Rich, he actually had some of his own wars, not his war stories, but people in his family life. It's unfortunately for being in the UK and the USA, we all know people who have got a bit of a war family line running through. And I've met plenty of people like that, and I'm sure you have as well. Mm-hmm. So it's exploring like people, yeah, from just different experiences.
And I think the idea as well was that the area that they were in was sort of a bit of a military town kind of thing around a barracks kind of thing. So I think that the idea was that a lot of the characters are sort of interconnected through that military link. Because that's how, obviously, Rich is on this video, and, you know, he's then in the second film and stuff. There is a tie across there. We've worked that stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, my family on my mother's side, military family. A lot of my grandfather, my great grandfather, my uncle buried on the military base. All, you know, fought in the different wars.
Well, this thing, even Portsmouth is a military town. It's somewhere where we are. It's a dockyard. It's where the Navy service is. It's got a lot of history related to military. So even if you don't agree with certain, like, you know, military ideas and stuff, it's kind of deep rooted in the area that you sort of is everywhere. It's the same with the memorial that you see in it. That's actually down by the seaside, this giant memorial towards World War II. So it's always prominent.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of how I was raised. I mean, I'm not like definitely not a war guy, but at the same time, always to respect the military and veterans. And the older guy in the movie, I'm sorry, I don't know his name, but is he a real veteran? The older character, who's kind of pops in and out.
Oh, Chris Vien.
No, I don't think so. Anyway, he wanted to, because of his age, worked out his character of the, you know, what he was going to be saying. Obviously, he was an MP. And he worked out that because of his age, he would have been, done national service, which is a weird thing to me, the idea that we would have all had to have gone off and been trained up. But that's why we sort of brought that into that element into that character, that he sort of had that kind of respect for the idea of war at the same time as not necessarily agreeing with that specific war.
So back to the trilogy element. So were some of the first two movies kind of filmed at the same time then?
Well, the first film was shot last year, and mm-hmm. the second one, we literally went back and did it in September this year.
Okay.
So it was more of a case of, we shot in the woods, that when the car's passing and it picks up Jackson, we shot in the woods next to that area, which was just, it wasn't really coincidental. It was planned like that, because we wanted to, again, in that third one, to have that map where you can pinpoint where these murders were and how far they were when they collected him. Because in our minds, it's not necessarily that you would connect the two murders being in the same place because of that drive. So that kind of allowed his character to get away with it a bit. And yeah, like, it's kind of fun, because again, with certain characters, you start thinking, well, how would their family respond to this incident? Mm. And are they still alive 20 years later? Yeah. Like Simon Berry pops up in the film. He's going to be in the third one, because we see more of how he felt, because obviously he has a connection, being his character being in the war.
Mm-hmm.
Rich was in the war. So in our mind, well, these two people must have known each other. There must have been some dots of an understanding of perhaps the two murders were linked, but no one would believe him. So yeah, it's just fun to watch the film and just find these characters and go, well, who else gave a fuck about it? And then, yeah, just finding things, especially, yeah, with the prequel, we found there's loads of little characters. You're like, oh, we need to get that person interviewed 20 years later. Yeah, it's a fascinating try to process with it, really.
Yeah.
It's directed by me, Jack, and Steve, who directed the prequel.
Yeah. And
being fully creatively involved in that respect.
Something I've, because I've known you guys for a while now, it seems like you're always making something. Like, I think that's very inspiring, because sometimes I have a lot of ideas and I don't ever get them done, but you're always making movies all the time, it seems.
I think this was a bit of an itchy feet idea, because we just got someone had lent us a camera that was a handy camera, old-fashioned camcorder type thing. And we just thought, well, this would be easy to do something found footage with. And I think in the middle of, we were still in the process of shooting I Curse This Land, which is coming out next year, hopefully. Well, it is. But it was such a long process to shoot that, because we were doing loads of set pieces and things like that. We just thought, like, how can we do something quick that we can, it's just fun and sort of spontaneous more than sort of all these planned kind of,
things.
Chaos focus.
Yeah.
But along those lines, so you're like, we're going to do something quick and fun, and then it becomes a trilogy, so it's no longer quick.
Yeah.
it was nice to be excited by something like that, because like Jack made a good point that with most serial killers nowadays, the whole Netflix, Amazon documentary is
part of
now. It's part of their timeline. So why not explore that with Jack as a serial killer?
Yeah, I think it's a really neat idea, because... instead of going right to that one, we're going to get some of like the backstory in a way, but then you probably get more actually of the backstory in the documentary.
Yeah. There's a bigger timeline to play with. And we also want to try and do him in prison, age Jackson up, like, so he looks like he's in his 50s, get the beard grown out further. And age up Simon, and just play with that. It's new things that we haven't really done before, so it'd be an interesting way to explore it.
And Jackson, at first I was like, I think that's Jackson, but honestly, you're much scarier in person. No, in the movie. And so, it's a great performance, honestly.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a lot of fun to play that sort of character, and you just get to sort of throw yourself in there and be weird and do strange things and sort of throw the conversation off kilter, so that no one really knows where you're going or what you're saying next or what you're going to do. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. I just get to be a bit of a bulldozer in the middle of the scene and not follow any direction. Just do whatever might put people off.
And I think it's one of the grimmest strangulations I've seen in movies. It's long, it's not very quick, which I think it's more realistic, and it just, and also it's more disturbing that way.
We did that when we first shot it. It was quite short, and we sort of realized when looking back on it, no, this is far too short. We need to add something to it. So that whole period of black is like post, isn't it?
Which strangulation do you mean?
The one near the end.
So we added in some extra audio and stuff just to really sort of like get it, because I think you needed to hear like every little moment of it.
Yeah, that works too, the extra audio, because sometimes when I watch movies, I think if you don't have, the noise can add a lot. So like the noise of her dying, it adds a lot to the scene.
Yeah. So you get the did a good job dying.
Yeah,
she did. Well, what did you shoot? What did you shoot the movie on? Is it shot on like a camera? Or, I mean, obviously a camera, but is it shot like on a video?
No, it was shot. It's a Sony cam. It's a 4K cam, which I thought like the problem is when you shoot in something that's like 480, and then try and get out to a distributor.
Yeah,
QC checks and be like, "Nah, I'm not interested. This is too low quality." Whereas you can bring something down. Mm-hmm. And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to give it that like vibe of the 2003, but still have the knowledge that we knew the image was going to be strong and that the ISO could handle the nighttime scenes and all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And again, we used the same cam for the prequel, and it still has that kind of vibe of still feeling like an older cam.
That's interesting, because a movie that I'm working on now with other people, it's a sequel. I don't know if they want me to tell, but people can put this together probably if they're on my Facebook. But their previous one was shot on a VHS, and they can't get it on Tubi because of that. So the new one is they did on a 4K camera, same kind, completely different kind of movie, but the same idea that to bring it down so it's still high quality.
It's frustrating with these QC checks because it just lets you, it stops you from being able to be creative with the technology, doesn't it? And do sort of different things. But, you know,
it's these muddy AIs. You give these QC checks, they go error, blah, 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 blah. And then you have to re-export the film to fix these little things. Yes, it's not fun, the deliverables from an independent filmmaker. And I think any filming can agree with that. Yeah. It's a bullshit process that really is, yeah.
Drive slowly mad over a year of just new export.
Yeah. Yeah. How about the process of like degrading the footage? Because it doesn't, sometimes you see stuff, it looks like someone just like hit, you know, the default like button on like on a Adobe product or something.
Well, that's it. The basic thing you could do is try and just research. So I tried to look up different kind of things we could play with in After Effects. It's very difficult because 2003, it's a very particular time when digital was changing to HD a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And there just wasn't a tutorial to do that. So I had to kind of take more of the 90s feel, but then it was kind of like, well, the camera doesn't have to come out exactly the year the film set.
That's something I think sometimes people don't think. Like, so I worked on a movie and they wanted a vintage car from, I think 82 or, and someone had one from 78. But they're like, oh, that's too old. But it's like, well, it would only have been 4 or 5 years. It's like not everyone had the brand new, the exact, you know, a car from that year.
Yeah.
So someone, it's very, like, not everyone today has a camera from 2023.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true. Yeah.
So I'm sorry if I talked over you, but I thought that's actually a good point.
No, it's all good. Yeah.
So bringing it down, though, so you used, like, you just were doing research from 2003 specifically, what it would look like. And
Yeah. And then we used sort of a mixture of Adobe After Effects and Premiere Pro, just sort of found different bits and pieces, overlays and things like this, and sort of little glitch effects to try and get the transitions between the shot sort of bit.
It's about a shot. Because it flicks from, like, the clip that's coming up back to the clips, that broken vibe and everything. Which was incredibly tedious. I mean,
frame by frame editing, you get these little sort of like clips to sort of go.
Yeah. But it comes through because, like I said, you could tell if, which is fine if you're putting some on YouTube or something just for fun, but you could tell if someone just used like the default setting of, you know, to make this look like a scratchy, and it's, you know, the same scratch over and over. Yeah. You know, this looks more like an actual video that someone would have found.
It's the same with the Tide folks because we had to add them like manually. So you watch the clip, and as soon as a minute passes, you have to change the time code. So it feels like it's constantly changing every minute that the clip's running.
And then because we're non-linear, we're trying to work out and forth, like, well, how many minutes have passed since, like, the, you know, what's 5 minutes ago?
So to go back a little bit, when you said, you know, this will be quick and easy, it, you know, really came to fruition.
Yeah,
well, the edit took a long time, but that sat at home, you know, that's not having to go out.
Stuff because like the ending, we were playing with different types of ending, and we wanted to do something with a mother and a child, and we had some other actors set up, and that kind of collapsed, and we had to wait a few months, and eventually we got a great actor, Hannah Harrison. She just got married, so her last name is different now. Yeah. But the child was my sister's, my sister's daughter, I guess, and my niece. And she was just like, yeah, she was just up for it and stuff. And at first she was a bit disappointed because she read the scripts and initially it was just the last sequence. And she was like, well, I just sit in the car, so that's it. I was like, well, now we're going to do some more. You get to play and stuff. She just ran with it. She wanted more scenes. She wanted more violence. It was like, no. It's all up here.
So I assume the it was a little bit on the airplane. Is that when you guys were coming to LA or going back from LA? Maybe
like Bella shot a whole bunch of stuff when we went over to LA, and she just wanted to, I guess, for like holiday footage, but she wanted to do something film with it. And because when we were thinking about it in the initial story, we were going to do lots more of like home footage, sort of holiday trips in the woods with deers and stuff. And it was a bit silly. And because we had all this stuff from LA, it was like, well, can I use this? And Bella was very happily to give it to us. And it was just finding those right little snippets so it didn't have to like take over too much of the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were there for quite a while. So it was just nice to get these little moments.
Yeah, because the more little things you add that are from different things, it makes it seem more like realistic as opposed they would only shoot this one like scene. You know what I mean?
Listen, we really had to think about when that camera gets broken, when he grabs it, and the whole effect comes into play that you've seen throughout the film. It really had to make sense. And that was important. It couldn't just like cut randomly to another point and we would argue or somewhere the narrative had to be placed. But the edit took about a year in some respects. So it was a long time just getting those bits and shooting the extra bits with Rich and Chris. With all the war interviews and stuff that was shot much later on, and we wanted again to have a few more people in that, but then we were like, oh, maybe that's too many people, they've constantly cut into these people that no one's really had a connection with, whereas at least two of them they could like feed into their stories a bit easier.
And I like that there's no score at the end, no score in the movie, and for the credits there's no score.
Yeah, it's that coldness. I love it in a film. Yeah. It's the same with like when you first see the end of Blair Witch Project and it's their real names. And you're like, oh my God. And it just takes you a second to just go, oh Jesus, is this real? Am I born a real film? What's going on? It's
yeah.
A cult. There's no
music. Yeah.
Yeah. And oddly enough, Eduardo Sanchez was just on the show last night, co-creator of Blair Witch.
Yeah. Wow. That must be cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. Yeah. Because, a cheap plug. Well, not really a cheap plug. It's tomorrow night. We're going to, Annabelle and I are going to a 12-hour horror movie marathon, and the theme is witches, and one of the movies is Blair Witch.
Nice. I wish there was more stuff like that down here, but you Americans have more respect for Halloween. That's what I saw last year.
So, when did you guys like get into found footage movies? Like a fan.
As a fan, like, I don't know, like, they just kind of pop up now and then. I didn't really get into them in a big way until we started doing more mockumentary stuff. Mm-hmm. So when we were doing our comedy shows, playing around mockumentary is the same sort of kind of thing, right? And then finding in a horror way, there's just so many different ways to explore found footage. And because it moves with technology in itself, it's just fascinating. And you find all these little ones throughout time, and you think the Cannibal Holocaust is the first, and then you watch, like, Punishment Park, which is mm-hmm. a ferocious fucking found footage film. Yeah, it feels like a very dry BBC sort of documentary. And that style I absolutely love. I love it when you can take that sort of documentary style and then throw in the horror. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we did more so. Saved Up Memories, despite the mess around with the edit, is one of our more straightforward found footage films that we've done. But yeah, there's always some story you can play in the found footage film. I think it's always one we can play, jump back to. And it teaches you a lot because you just focus on the performance. You just focus on the characters.
Yeah.
You're not worrying too much about the technicality of shots. And it's funny because when we were doing Taped Our Families, and I'm sure Steve won't mind saying, this was his first found footage film. So it took him a while to not think about cut shots or sequences. And he talked about a dream sequence at one point. I was like he was like, yeah, it'd be like post-traumatic stress, dream sort of thing. I was like, well, cameras don't get post-traumatic stress.
Not yet, anyway. Not yet. That's on the 8K or something.
It allows you to like play within the freedom, but also the restrictions of just getting used to just playing with characters and working out how a set piece and where the moments need to come in.
But it also makes you think about the camera differently. It makes you have to sort of think about it like a character, because it is, you know, it's being passed around. It's got to be, there's got to be an explanation for why someone's holding it, why someone's filming with it.
Yeah. You know? Because that does take you out of a found footage movie if when you're watching, you're like, well, why, you know, when they break the rules of a found footage movie, you know, like there's no reason why this is being filmed or, you know. Also, honestly, sometimes they do have a score in something and I always think, why is this here? It doesn't make sense that someone find it and put some music in or, you know.
That's the thing. I think when you've got something like found footage where you've got like these really sort of intense rules that like if you break them it ruins the kind of format of it allows you to sort of get more creative with playing with those rules, a sort of a structure to sort of like, you know, move around and sort of do something different with it. And that's what like I find fascinating about a genre like that, is because it does give you those limitations that kind of opens up more ideas and things in some ways.
Like the documentary horror style of things, like there you can bring music in because you got to think, what kind of documentary is this? Mm-hmm. I think because we did that with The Truthful Owl and Burning Hearts and films like that, and they were really trying to ape the reality TV sort of style, but it's still found footage at the end of the day because it's in that documentary sort of vibe, and there's just so much you can do with it. I think everyone who isn't so confident with like filmmaking but wants to be a filmmaker should do a found footage film. Just to get used to actors and just getting used to telling a longer story, you know.
So, what are you guys doing with Taped Up Memories? Did you do festivals? Are you going to do festivals?
We're looking to do some festivals, but we're trying to see if festivals are interested in screening like both films, because Taped Up Family is the prequel,
right?
Into just in the sound mix. It will be done by the end of the year, and been working with Darkside Releasing. We're trying to get out a release of it this year and then get the prequel out by spring. So hopefully you can elevate enough interest
once
we start next year doing the third one. So it's quite a, in all honesty, you know, it's the X Pearl thing. You know, that was such a fascinating way to release and distribute a film by releasing a film and a trailer immediately afterwards.
Yeah.
Get fascinated with it yourself. You know?
Yeah, I remember, I almost thought it was just a fake trailer. Until, you know, then you find out, oh, this is actually coming out, this movie. Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a cool way to do it. So, yeah, we kind of wanted to see if we could do something similar. You know?
Is that part of the reason, you know, it's like a little bit over an hour? It's, you know, you're more likely to get into a festival if you have two, like, 1 hour movies as opposed to, like, two actually, hour and a half movies.
The reason why the first film is exactly 63 minutes until the credits roll is because we were trying to do it as a short play tape. So when you were recording on tape back in the day, you'd shoot in short
play. Like SD or, yeah.
And literally, short play was 63 minutes. That's when the tape would end.
Interesting.
We wanted to do it that way. I mean, we've explored, it's been longer than the second one. Because that was long. So we got to points where, like, we hadn't shot enough footage. We're like, shit. We still needed to be this amount. At the moment, we need to come up with 30 seconds, so I had to put some more of the holiday stuff in and just extend little bits here just to get to that perfect 63 minutes. But I think it was worth keeping to that, at least for this one, because it's supposed to be a tape. It's called Taped Up Memories, you know, so we wanted to keep as possible to that.
What are your guys' relationships with festivals, since you've been making stuff for a while? You know, do you do like a lot of the same festivals? And when you go there, like, you know, do you ever meet people that then you guys end up, you know, they become either part of the Trash Rides family or you work together in the future?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Horror on
Sea is the main one, really, because that's it's just a great place to meet like a lot of like-minded filmmakers and stuff that are just cool people.
Like Steve Sibley, we met him at Horror on Sea.
Oh, nice.
Tons of our films. We produced the display with him earlier this year, and now he's directed Taped Up Families. And he's a good friend. He comes down every couple of weeks. And Tom Lee Rutter and Singh. There's just so many people there. And it's just community driven. You know, it's all in one place. You watch a film and then you go and drink and you just hang out and socialize. And then, yeah, you have a respect for the people in the room. So it's easier to then to want to work with them later on. Or even like, because we do film screenings in Portsmouth, being able to screen those films and getting them to come down and see what's happening down here and stuff, you know? So, yeah, like other festivals, Paris Cinema is awesome in Derby. We had Incessant there this year and Home is Rare Lane last year. And going up there, I was happy to see the screening was sold out last year. I was like, wow, that's sold out screening. It's weird with some festivals, like I've entered the same festivals every year that I've not got into yet. I'm still trying to break ground with those ones, you know? And I think festival is so important to really get that vibe of how your film's, you know, responding, because we don't have theaters to screen the films. We can't just go through, no one wants to waste their time or feel the pain of going for every IMDb review to know if your film's good or not.
Right. It's probably not a great, it's probably not a great way to even know anyway.
No. So like festivals, being with that kind of community that enjoy independent horror, that's what's important.
Yeah, and not only will you find people there that will actually enjoy what you're creating, but people who give you constructive feedback and tell you what, like, you know,
you could. Yeah, they won't just say this sucks. They'll say, you know, maybe you could. Yeah, right.
Yeah, because what's the point in that? It's like, it helps absolutely no one, but you know, IMDb will tell you that.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, though. I'm a big fan of festivals, and Annabelle and I always talk about the community feel. And like, so I've been to some like very big festivals, and that's great and all. But to me, a festival where it's one screen, because everyone's watching all the movies together. And then, like you said, you go and hang out after, you talk about the movies or other movies. And to me, that's the best kind of festival to be part of.
Yeah.
And I'm a big advocate, no matter if you're just a fan and want to see cool stuff, but if you're in any level of filmmaking or aspiring filmmaker, to me, they're very valuable for, you know, you're going to collaborate with other people. And it's, I mean, that's how I got involved in anything, was just going to the festivals.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
Yeah.
And so from there, you hope to have a physical release?
Yeah, I think that's what Darkside are aiming to do, and then get out to as many VOD platforms as possible. Again, the plan is that hopefully by the time Taped Out Memories has hit more VODs, Taped Out Families are becoming out on physical media. So then again, by the title Taped Out, the last one's going to be called Taped Out. I don't even say
Taped Out Killer.
Yeah. Taped Out Memories, Taped Out Family, and the Taped Out Killer. So yeah, by the time we're shooting that one or it's released, the other two have had enough circulation to hopefully, yeah, gain enough interest to want to see the full trilogy.
Mm.
And in a weird way, like, they're designed that you can watch them in any order, because the prequel's the second one, and that third one gives you the entire overview. You could easily watch that third one and then be like, oh shit, there's more about it, and more of an in-detail one, because those memories are set over a day and a bit, really, and so is the other one. Well, it's set over a day.
Yeah.
So it's just a short moment of seeing what those characters are like. But then, yeah, that third one's the entire, hopefully, overview of the thing. There's more murders that he obviously did. Yeah, we're going to get one of those big whiteboards and just like it's a proper crime scene and just have all the characters and all the dotted bits. And was there someone who was homeless in the woods? Maybe they could be accused of it.
He's been going on about these cork boards with string and pins for weeks now. So I think this is, it's going to happen.
When Steve's back down, that's what we're doing.
And then the fourth one will be a documentary about like an obsessed, you know, fan, Sam, and he's... It'll be like a meta film, yeah.
Well, Steve wants to take my characters to space. So.
All right. That takes a really strange turn at that point.
Yeah. Well, you know, it gets
yeah, we've seen it in other ones, other franchises. I don't know if it's ever worked, but...
No, they never
worked. This will be the time.
Yeah.
So where can people follow Trash Arts, Taped Up Memories, see, you know, where you guys are going from here?
If you want to check out trailers and any of our more recent short films stuff, you can check it out on Trash Arts Productions on YouTube. On Facebook, we are Trash Arts UK. Not on Twitter. Well, we are on Twitter, but I hate that place.
I agree. I have one because, like, probably the same way, you have to, you kind of have to have, like, every social media just to plug your stuff.
Well, that's it. I got the trash ass one, but I had to delete my one because I just couldn't deal with the bullshit. It's too much bullshit.
Yeah.
Too much forgiving people that don't, that shouldn't be forgiven. But, yeah, like, yeah, you can find about there. Do we have any other social media?
Instagram,
yeah, Trash Ass UK. And if you want to check out some of our films, there are, like, I think there's 13 of them, or at least 10, on Tubi.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there's plenty to be able to check out there.
Tubi's great. So much independent, cool stuff. I would say the only problem with Tubi, it's hard to navigate sometimes just to find, you know, unless you know exactly what you're looking for. But besides that, there's so many, there's older stuff, there's new stuff. It's a great place, especially for horror fans.
Well, our film Senseless was recently added to Tubi, which we screened with you.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, people should check that out. And I understand there'll be a new trailer dropping soon.
Yes, there will be a trailer for Taped Up Families, which we were trying to get done today, but because of the old deliverables that I had to do for a different film, I could not get it completed today. But hopefully it'll be out next month. And a first trailer for I Curse This Land as well, because that screening is having its world premiere or on C in January. Right. So yeah, that'll be completed soon. So yeah, we got a lot of releases next month. We've got Taped Up Memories. We're not sure what date yet. There's another film we're not sure on the date either, Devil May Care. And then Incessin, our body horror, sonic horror, that comes out on the 7th of November. So yeah, okay. There's a lot of our releases next month.
Yeah, not only do I like that you make so much stuff, you make a lot of different styles of, because as a horror fan, I like all different things. I don't just like, you know, one style of horror. That's kind of what I like about horror. Depends what mood I'm in.
Yeah, that's it. There are so many things to be able to explore in horror. And that's an exciting idea than just sticking to one sort of playhouse.
Yeah, and I mean, you can do anything else with it as well, because you can make it a horror drama, a horror comedy, a horror fantasy, a horror sci-fi. You know, you can blend any other genre into it and kind of satisfy anything that you kind of want to do. Yeah, I love it as a genre.
And again, Jackson, you were great in the movie, and I hope to see more of you in the trilogy.
Flatter me too much.
I know that neither of you are very good at taking compliments.
British thing. No, yeah, it's
Simon, on the other hand, if he was here, he loves
compliments. Oh,
he loves the compliment. Like, more.
But also, honestly, Simon, he's a lot of range too, because sometimes I think of him as, like, you know, I see him and I kind of want to smile and laugh, but he could be a very he's very good at being serious too. He's a good actor.
Just about to do an exorcism film with him, some other actors.
There he is.
You were great as well, Simon.
He was
groovy.
But yeah,
hello from Jamie Hill.
The exorcism film is a much more intense experience, and Simon wanted to explore a character that wasn't so comedy based. So I'm looking forward to doing that with him, taking one of a very different sort of journey as well.
And thanks also, and the people in the Kick, but for some reason I can't pop up the Kick comments. I don't know. But thank you guys.
Thank you for watching.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll do this again soon.
Always. Yeah, plenty more films to screen with you.
Yeah, never very ending. Good.
All right, very good. I have a little bit part in something, but hopefully someday I'll have a bigger role in something at some point.
Yeah,
minute. Instead of, you know, a few seconds.
One day we'll meet up in either this country or another.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Thanks, guys. Yeah, thanks, everybody.
Have a good day.
Shout out.
Bye.
Bye-bye.